Kia ora, I'm Andrew Whiteside, and today my guests are Tainui Tokiwaho and Nahirua Rohina, who are involved in a theatre production in New Zealand called Racists Anonymous. I began this interview by asking Tainui what the play was about, but we soon got into a fascinating discussion about racism and its effects on people. It's a long interview, but one I think you'll find interesting. Good morning, boys. Nice to meet you both. And we're going to be talking about your new production called Racists Anonymous.
Yes, correct.
So, really fascinating process. Tell me what this thing is all about.
Well, the structure that we're using for the show is very loosely based on any of the anonymous help groups that people might go to, but it's very loosely based on that. So it's just a concept that some people may be vaguely familiar with or very familiar with. So the idea is the audience arrives and they'll sit in a group. And by arriving, you're acknowledging that you're racist. And the person who runs the place will get a mantra to say, and we'll all say it, the audience included, and we're all acknowledging that we are all battling this this illness that we have called racism. And the characters are in the audience with you as well and expressing their levels of racism in the hopes that it's expressing some of the things that you have deep inside you, but we're not pointing it out for you, just sort of placing some things up in absurd ways so you can digest it a bit easier.
So we're acknowledging, though, that this is, to start off with, a comedy.
Yes.
Which I guess makes it a little bit safer. That's when right. You're challenging people's innermost issues, shall
Absolutely.
We say.
Yeah, well, it would be the easiest way in, really, I guess. Having a comedic aspect to this show really allows people to take it in and understand just how absurd it really is. And let's be fair, it is. By doing that and seeing the extremities that it goes to, then going later on and going, oh, actually, at the heart of that, there is something in there. And yeah, I guess that is something that I can reflect on within myself, yeah.
Laughter, though, frees us up, doesn't it? And when we connect with people through laughter, then we're more able to actually connect with them in a deeper way too, yeah?
Comedy's really sneaky. It's a really, really beautiful tool. The way if you play with comedy properly, then you trick people into opening their hearts up a little bit. And you can do it a lot easier with comedy than you can with drama. And that's the time when you have tricked them to open their hearts up to strike with some truths. And you see a lot of comedians who have managed to do that over the years. And it's such a beautiful thing to observe.
And there is our audience participation.
Yeah, it's not forced though. We're not going to force, but we're hoping that people are compelled to interact. So there is an element of it. You are deep in the middle of it. Yeah, you know.
But only to the degree where, say, the person running the meeting may ask, "Would anyone like to say something?"
Yeah.
Only to that degree. And if they would, then they may. And otherwise, you're fine to just sit there with the other racists and and be silent if you like.
So it's a safe space, even though you're
absolutely
going down this. So is the underlying assumption that every single person on the planet is or can be racist?
Yeah. Well, definitely can be. Is an interesting one. I mean, I think we've dived into the whole aspect of what racism actually is. And so, and a lot of this will be brought up in the show, so I don't want to spoil too much unless... So the defining concept of that between sort of racism and discrimination is the power imbalance. And so, there's definitely a concept of people can be 100%. We're just going to stay there.
I personally subscribe to the concept. So Tainui personally subscribes to the concept. And I'm saying that because this is a devised piece and there's lots of different opinions placed on it. But we are all affected by racism in one way or another. And so because we are affected by it, we are therefore implicit in racism in one way or another as well. And that doesn't always necessarily make you racist, but we all have a responsibility to engage with the thing that is affecting our entire community. Now, that concept can be applied to lots of isms that exist in our world.
And Hira, you brought up the issue of power dynamics, and I think that's a really important thing for people to realise that I think every single human being is capable of being prejudiced to some degree towards whatever group in society we think of. But it's very different when your institutions, your government structures, anything from a hospital through to a school, through to educational, whatever it is, are actually empowered to benefit one group of people over another. Yeah. And so that's an important definition. You may have racist thoughts, but if you're not empowered to be able to carry those out, that's a very different situation.
That's right. An anecdote that I often use to help explain this that I find useful is if a white person are in a situation, we both throw racial slurs at each other. So we're in a shop. Often the difference will be the shopkeeper's perspective, that when the white person goes away and their emotions have been hurt, which is fair because I was being prejudiced towards them, and those have settled, the lives of other white people won't necessarily be impacted by my words. Now, when I go home and my emotions have settled after those statements, there's a very high chance that the lives of other brown people who go into that shop will be impacted by that altercation. And that's an example of power that we often don't think about and often don't see, and how that affects us. Or somebody who wasn't even in that conversation. If Ngahiriwa went into the shop after me, the shopkeeper will have a very specific opinion of Ngahiriwa based on the conversation that me and this other person had, which wouldn't be the case for you going into the shop, Andrew.
Well, that's right. I mean, you don't really get much whiter names than Andrew Whiteside. So,
it's in the name.
I'm aware of the privilege of my name, amongst other things. I had a talk with a friend of mine who is white and who got a little agitated because they said, well, I was from a poorish background and why are we always taking it as though white people are the issue? And I said, well, first of all, we need to move beyond just the individual situations, because, of course, there's levels of privilege in all sorts of areas. Mm-hmm. But the fact is that his name, my name, on a CV with no photograph, chances are we'd get picked for an interview over someone who had a, excuse me doing air quotes, foreign-sounding name. Mm. And the same as when we go into, if I'm pulled over by the police at a stop, chances are if I've done something wrong, I may get a caution, I probably won't get arrested. So it's those kinds of things, and I think that's what you're pointing out. Again, it comes back to that, the power dynamics and the generations of institutionalized racism that people are not even aware of.
There's yes, absolutely. And there's something really interesting about the example that you gave us, because I remember hearing a quote, it wasn't too long ago, where it said, the difference between a poor white person and a poor black person is that the white person thinks it shouldn't be that way. Right. And that's part of the privilege, as you expressed, because I grew up with not a lot of means either, but I don't ever remember thinking this shouldn't be the case, because when I looked around me, it was normal. This was all of us. I'm like, oh yeah, this is our life. But it's not uncommon for white people to look around and go, this isn't right. And that's fair as well for them to think that, because what they're being shown, the same as us, on television or in the world, is a world of white people who don't live in that space. So it's reasonable to assume that shouldn't be the norm. But it is a perspective that makes sense, but is a part of the imbalance.
So yeah, really fascinating concept. I think it's unfortunately I can't make it to the show, but which is a shame. But it sounds really, really, really cool. So what prompted you to want to do this?
Aside from just being asked to do something, which is always cool. No, this one is important, and I didn't realize how important it was to me until the last few years. I mean, I remember doing a show and I had always shortened my name, and one of my directors said that it's a shame that that's a thing, and I never thought of it like that. I just thought, oh yeah, sorry, okay. And I'd realized at that point I was apologizing for my name, hence apologizing for myself, or for being, which sucks. So yeah, anything that I can do that will help bring this sort of kaupapa to life, I'm definitely down for. It's so important.
Can I ask you, did you consciously shorten your name?
Yeah, I did.
What was going on in your mind when you did that?
Because people were saying, oh, that's too hard. Or is there an easier way to say your name? And I'd be like, oh, you can say this. And I never thought about it too much at that point. I was like just trying to make life easier for my Pākehā mates, I guess. And then after that was pointed out to me, I made a conscious decision, like, no, this is not going to happen anymore. I will not, because my name is amazing. I love my name, and my name has whakapapa to it. Mm. There's many other people that have come in my family with that same name. So, you know, I have a responsibility to uphold that, as I have a responsibility to uphold Maritanga.
And full disclosure here, you have told me your name. I have struggled with it because some Māori words, it takes me a little bit to get my tongue in the right position. And so I know I'm going to be recorded saying your name and I don't yet feel confident in saying it. So this is a really valuable discussion because...
Well, I believe in you. I think you can do it.
I'm sure I can. I just need some more practice. And I suspect there will be a lot of people, a lot of Pākehā New Zealanders who... will think, well, I'm not racist, or I don't, you know, I wasn't there back in the time, but they're still implicitly supporting that if they're not actively helping to tear it down.
It's a hard space for white people right now.
It doesn't have to be.
Yeah, well, because I was talking to our friend Acacia, who is she's part Māori, but has spent most of her life growing up I Roto te Ao Pākehā, and that was supported by her aesthetic as well. And the reason I think it's a hard space for Pākehā, and it's fair for it to be, is there's just so much uncertainty. And the anecdote that I'll give is we had this big chat. Somebody wrote this rant on Facebook about, and I don't mind that it was on social media, but she was talking about how she got so angry at these white people who were mean to this Māori lady, and she was... The fury that was in the message made me annoyed at her being so angry about it, this Pākehā lady. And I didn't know why. I was like, why am I annoyed at this lady? She's done all of the things that we say you're meant to do. She stood up and she voiced it, and she was there and she supported. Those are all the things. And then we were talking in the group, and Acacia was also, she was like, well, why are you mad? And I realized I landed on a thing where I get mad now, which is, I think it's unfair to some degree. I get mad at Pākehā who have a level of anger that they haven't earned. Right. I feel like, I'm certain that I earned it. My family earned it. We sacrificed. We lost for it. The battle, the fight is ours. We earned the fight. And then I stood back and I watch, and I'm watching Pākehā fighting. I'm like, no, this is not your fight. You haven't earned that anger. You can't take the positive stuff out of the racism, which is being allowed to fight, without sitting in the negative stuff that we get as well. And my poor friend Acacia, she said, well, what do we do then? You said we had to fight, and now we're fighting. What are we doing? I was like, I don't know.
Your feelings were because the Pākehā you were talking about was... angry on your behalf.
Well, it was the level of ire that I was reading into, and that was what I was responding to, of you have not earned that level of ire. You standing up for us, and that's fine.
That's really interesting.
But then the level of anger that you are putting out, you haven't earned it. Your family didn't bleed for it. You didn't fight for it. The fight, like that fight, is ours. You don't get to get into the ring with us. You get to stand on the side, and you get to say, go. But you don't get to put gloves on and do the fun stuff. Because once that fight's done, you get to go home and not have to deal with the racism anymore. We constantly fight. There's no rest. We don't get to have a break from the fight. So because you get to have a break, you don't get to have any of the good stuff either. This is what I finally figured out. But in the moment when I read it that night, and I was angry, and I messaged my friends in the cast, and I was like, okay, we're going to talk about this tomorrow, because I don't know why I'm having such a negative response to all of these positive things. Like I do want our whānau, I do want our Pākehā whānau to stand up and be a voice and say, don't treat our nannies that way. You mustn't do that. Mm. And then it was a revelation for me when I was talking to Acacia, and she's like, but what do we do? And I was like, I don't know. I think you just need to sit there, and sometimes you'll be right and sometimes you'll be wrong. And it will be hard, and that's okay too. It's okay for no one to know, and it's okay for it to be hard for you for a little while, because it normally isn't, and that's all right.
That's really fascinating. Yeah. So where have you come to in a conclusion around that? You kind of explained that a little bit, but would you go back to her and say, don't fight the battles, don't get angry, don't?
I would warn Pākehā against it. I would say, just know the level of anger that you are allowed. I would go back, I would caution and be aware of the level of anger. What is it for? Who are you angry for?
So you think potentially there could be something else other than solidarity. And that's not to say that she's not feeling solidarity, but there could be something else that belongs to her that is coming out in that fight.
Yeah, I think so. And it's not earned in that fight. You haven't earned it in that fight. The level of anger that you're feeling and that you're putting out, it doesn't belong here. In this Māori fight, the anger that you're having doesn't belong here. It is valid because it is yours, but it lives in a different world. Your support, like I said, you stand on the side of the ring. You support us, you yell us on. If somebody cheats in the fight, then you say, don't do that. You do not get to cheat. You fight this fairly. And then you hush again. And then your anger, your ire, the thing that really stirs you up, lives in another space. And it's in your space. That's what I believe. What were your thoughts on that one, Brian?
Yeah, well, it reminded me of when I was down in Wellington. I went along to the Black Lives Matter march. Mm. And there were a whole bunch of us, obviously. And the chanting was happening and people were leading the chants. And that was awesome. As black people were leading the chants, and that was great. And then at one point it went a bit quiet, and then these Pākehā started up and they started leading the chant. And I remember feeling how that wasn't right. I remember thinking, no, you don't get to lead that. This is not your place. This is not your like, yes, great, you're supporting, amazing, but you don't get to lead that charge. This is not yours. Your role is to get behind and support the fight. So yeah, with that going, with what happened there was, I felt that was a similar situation, or even the same, where it was like, yeah, okay, cool. I understand that you are supporting, and I do understand that you feel very strongly about this. But for you to then charge to the front, that's not for you. That's not your space. Allow us to do that. Allow us to do that. You support us, because that's the way that we will be able to shift together. Otherwise, you become white savior, and that's not what this needs.
But that's why it's hard for white people, I think. Yeah. and reasonably so, man. I remember feeling a similar thing when I'm trying to support our wahine. When I'm there trying to empower our wahine, and the amount of times that I just have to sit down and shut up. And just sit there and wait. And then my wahine, our wahine and our whānau, will tell me when it's my time to stand up. They'll do their mahi, and it's always just a look. Especially from the wahine and our whare te pau, it'll just be a turn and a look. And I'll know I stand up and speak then. And when I'm done, I sit down again. And that is the way that I am learning, because I have made the mistakes in the past, to stand up and go, hey, don't say that to her. And often I'll be like, don't you talk for me. Okay. And I go back and sit down again. So I know what that discomfort is. And it is hard. And that is the space that Pākehā are sitting in at the moment. The Pākehā who really want to be different, who really want to change, who really want to be part of the change. It is a difficult space to be in, Pākehā mā. But keep going.
Yeah. We have to navigate this together, I'm sure.
I understand where you're coming from. And it's a challenging one for people like myself who are appalled at prejudice hate and feel a passionate anger when I see somebody being mistreated, no matter who they are. Yeah. When and how do you speak up and make a stand, and what's appropriate? But I agree with you. I think it's about, we white folk need to observe when we're asked questions, or if we're in the office or we're in family, we can talk to those people and say, this is my perspective. But I get the whole point about it. You know, we can't lead the charge.
But it's also, I mean, yeah, I hear you say that, but then I think about, so you say you have a husband, and I think about my brother, and I think about my co-leader of Te Pau, Amanda Rees, who are all gay, and there's fight that has had to happen. You're the same age as my brother, in his 50s. Amanda's in a space there as well, and I say that because that was a time where fight was necessary. You're part of a whānau who knows what the fight is.
Mm. And interestingly, it was a heterosexual woman who introduced the homosexual law reform to Parliament. Heterosexuals Unafraid of Gays was a group that formed, so there were lots of people speaking and supporting, But the people who made the biggest difference were all the courageous lesbians and gay men who stood up and told their stories and were listened to. And then people suddenly thought, oh, yeah, these people aren't the devils. They don't have horns. They're not, you know, they're not doing all these vile things. So yeah.
Well, in actual fact, a lot of the research I did about racism, I've forgotten her name now, but there was a lesbian lady from the 70s who her work with battling for equality is quoted a lot, and tools taken from a lot of the things she did is added to part of the fight for equality and racism that I read in about a few people in America and England. So the fight that your whānau have done, have paved a pathway for a lot of fights that are happening now. So, like, I suppose I'm just saying I understand the fight inside my brother, for example, when prejudice comes up, because I'm like, yes, you've spent a lifetime of fighting, and that my gay whānau, you have, of a certain age, have spent a lifetime of fighting, and it makes sense to me where that one comes from. I see it. So it is just an interesting fluctuating space.
Yeah, and humans trying to get on with one another and sometimes failing spectacularly. Yeah,
something you said before about those differences, I remember something Ricky Gervais said in one of his stand-up comedy, and I really thought it was genius, because we were talking about differences and similarities, and it's really easy to point out our differences, but harder sometimes to find similarities, but there are so many. And he was talking about religion, and he was talking to somebody who was Christian, and they said, you don't believe in God. And he said, no, you and I, he said, was it say there's 2,000 gods? I just don't believe in 2,000. You don't believe in 1,999. We actually agree on more things than we disagree on. And that perspective really shifted a whole bunch of stuff in my brain as well, the way to approach people and realize there's that one major difference. But 1,099 similarities can build up to something much stronger than that single big difference that sits there.
And I think that's a good place to finish this conversation. That was beautiful. And thank you so much for coming in, and all the best. And maybe, with fingers crossed, it could be something that goes on tour.
Well, we are.
We are going on tour. We're going up Northland in a few weeks' time. So, yeah, it's going to be cool.
Fantastic.
Kia ora.
That was Tainui Tokiwaho and Nahirua Rohina talking about their show Racists Anonymous and the related issues and effects of racism. Now, a reminder, you can find lots of other interviews, information, and plenty of my own opinion on my website, andrewwhiteside.com, and while there, you can also sign up for my regular newsletters. I am Andrew Whiteside. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you soon.